You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
This week's bits. The best news nuggets from Breakfast and The Wire from this week.
Atamariye, Kohana Ross, Tokawingoa, and welcome to this week's bits. University of Auckland students protested this week to demand for the Vice-Chancellor, Stuart McCutcheon, to actively support divestment from oil, coal and gas companies. According to Fossil Free University of Auckland spokesperson Alex Johnston, the university is invested in companies with interest in fossil fuels through its $120 million investment fund. The group occupied the Chancellor's office on Monday and marched in protest on Wednesday. 95BFM's Katie Doyle did a great report looking into these accounts.
An estimated 100 people attended the protest, led by activist group Fossil Free UOA, urging the Vice-Chancellor to follow in the footsteps of Auckland Council, Victoria and Otago University, who have all pulled their investments from the coal, oil and gas industries. Fossil Free UOA spokesperson Alex Johnston says the aim of the march was to apply additional pressure to the Vice-Chancellor, following his continual disregard of the group's message.
This march has been organised over the last couple of months, but our campaign has been going for over 2.5 years. And so this is really about showing the mandate for this issue from students and staff in the university community.
Johnston said he is thrilled with the amount of support the group is receiving, both on campus and online.
With Monday's occupation having such support from the students on social media, from messages from people we've never been in touch with, being like, what you're doing is amazing, all solidarity to you.
Professor of Computer Science, Clark Tomberson, attended the march and says it is time for the university to divest from fossil fuels once and for all.
I'm disappointed that it's been so slow in acting. Even the Auckland Council has managed to act. I'm hoping that the trustees will get together and decide it's time to change.
The protest follows a sit-in that was staged in Vice-Chancellor McCutcheon's office earlier this week.
This was a really important local issue that happened this week, but really what everyone was talking about was kafifi. What is kafifi? On Wednesday night, President of the United States, Donald Trump, tweeted a curious unfinished sentence which read, "Despite the constant negative press, kafifi." The tweet stayed up for a whole of 6 hours, in which time debate around the meaning of the term consumed Twitter. Some speculated Trump had experienced a medical episode and he couldn't finish the tweet, while others wondered if it was his final tweet and the rest of history would stop. Once the tweet was deleted, the president tweeted, "Who can figure out the true meaning of kafifi? Enjoy!" Harry Willis spoke to our State of the States WNYU radio correspondent Nick Swaney about this whole business.
Yeah, essentially, after Donald Trump typed, despite the constant negative press, all that, Sean Spicer basically said that the president and a small group of people know exactly what he meant. Basically that it was a typo and Sean Spicer didn't really convey that properly. And, you know, this isn't a big deal. This isn't a big deal that Donald Trump had a typo on Twitter. What the big deal is that this is just another example of the White House press secretary not having a clear line of communication with the president, and therefore the president not having a clear line of communication with our press, which is has very, very big implications about, like, transparency, about what's going on in the government. It's definitely not doing anything well for our trust of our political system, which is no big surprise at this point. And yeah, there have been talks about Donald Trump getting a security team to vet his Twitter account and his tweets, but that's looking like it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, well, the tweet stayed up for so long. It was about five or six hours that it was up. Yes. Show? Like, no one was able to get to him and say, delete this.
Yeah, or if they did, he refused to. You know, Donald Trump's Twitter account is a direct line between the president and the people, which is something that is quite unprecedented, right? Like, the presidents in the past have always had, you know, people advising them in between them and what they say to the public. And, you know, this goes to show that maybe that's not exactly what we want when we have a president like Donald Trump.
And also in terms of looking at his Twitter, his tweets do seem to be getting a lot more panicked, you could say, or a little, he's getting frustrated. I mean, with his approval rating, I mean, the collusion with Russia story is not going away. He's had minimal legislative victories. Is he panicking? The future of press conferences themselves seems to be in the balance, with Sean Spicer even saying no TV cameras are allowed at yesterday's briefing. What's happening there?
Yeah, I'm no psychologist, but I think, and what a lot of people think is happening is Donald Trump is becoming very alone and isolated, because people in his team who stand up to him and has said, hey, you should be doing this, this is a bad idea, you need to get your stuff together, those people have been removed from their positions in the White House or the Oval Office very, very quickly. And so advisors are scared to advise Donald Trump when he's doing something wrong, and because then they would lose their jobs. And so Donald Trump now doesn't have anyone to correct him or anyone to go to discuss these things. And it's a very isolating thing. And the only outlet that he really has for that is Twitter. It's not like really a condition you would want to see in the leader of this huge country, but that's what a lot of people are saying is happening.
Why do you think Trump is looking to reshuffle his cabinet?
I think it's a natural response to, you know, members of his former team now suddenly coming out. Like Comey now said, has made comments about how Donald Trump asked him to stop the investigation about collusion with Russia in his campaign. Things like that are just really, so I think this is just a symptom of things like that, where Donald Trump doesn't know who he can trust on his team. I think it might backfire on him, because more and more people who he removes from office could come out and give incriminating information about him, because who knows what's out there. But I don't think that like shuffling White House staff is really going to create any major differences in what we see Donald Trump or his administration doing. But it looks like he's scrambling to kind of fix the situation.
And although this Covfefe business provided some laughter for our midweek, political commentator David Slack brought us back to reality when he spoke on Breakfast on Thursday morning.
Just when you're laughing at him, the wanker goes and takes the US out of the Paris Climate Agreement.
Indeed. Mere hours after the Covfefe gaffe was taken down, Trump tweeted about how he will be announcing a major decision in the next few days regarding the climate pact. Then, on Friday, Mr. Trump announced he would be pulling the United States out of the Paris Climate Agreement.
The United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord, but begin negotiations to re-enter either the Paris Accord or in really entirely new transaction.
The Paris Agreement is a multilateral agreement adopted in December 2015 and ratified by 147 countries that aims to hold the increase in global temperatures to below 2 degrees and reduce overall greenhouse gas emissions. The agreement is the world's first comprehensive climate agreement. During the election campaign, Trump made it clear he favoured withdrawal. University of Auckland environmental politics lecturer Julia MacArthur spoke to Sam Smith about what Trump's decision means for the future of the agreement.
I think it's a bit of a mixed bag, actually. I think at a broader level, we should be very concerned, because obviously having a country that's responsible for around 16% of global CO2 emissions pull out of an agreement that is focused on tracking and reducing those emissions, that's very significant. So having such a major player on the polluting side of things actually pulling out is significant. However, at the same time, a number of commentators have also suggested that the role that the United States has been playing in these agreements in the past has been to slow down progress, actually, and taking really significant action, and as a bit of a spoiler. And the other point I would actually mention is that sub-state actors in the United States are actually still taking significant action, like California, for example. So while it is really significant, it's certainly not the death, let's say, of significant climate action by other actors.
Because the US has never really been 100% committed to multilateral approaches to addressing climate change, have they?
No, certainly not. But again, as I said, the sub-state actors like California have absolutely been leading in this area. So yeah, as I was saying, there's been a bit of a spoiler role being played by the United States, but we need them to take action. We need them to take action for a range of reasons. One of them is because one of the big focuses of the Paris Agreement was on loss and damage and getting developed countries in particular to really help aid the transitions in poorer countries. So for a very wealthy country like the United States with the technical and financial know-how to do a lot more on climate in terms of electrification and renewable energy and development of new technologies, to have them back off is, I think, one of the commentators in the news this week with Trump planning on pulling back was talking about it as a betrayal of international commitments and an abdication of American leadership. So the language from global partners on this is actually very strong. The signaling is that this is a really bad look for the United States, but also for a wealthy country like this to back off on their moral commitments to lead is really significant.
With Trump's election, has the US administration's attitude to climate change and addressing it gotten worse compared with, say, the Obama administration?
Oh, absolutely, without a question. I mean, for example, one of the ways we see this is how Scott Pruitt, who's a noted climate change skeptic, so he doesn't believe the science, basically, that humans are causing temperatures to increase, that CO2 emissions are behind this, and that then we need policy action to reduce this. He was confirmed as the head of the Environmental Protection Agency. Another way we see this significant kind of climate skepticism and heel-dragging or outright actually reversals of some of the Obama climate emissions or policies was that the Environmental Protection Agency's budget was recently cut by over 30%. So there's significantly been rollbacks on climate policy action at the national level in the U.S. since Trump's been elected. It's been very significant and very clear.
Do you have any confidence that under this administration they could come up with some good policies to address climate change?
Huh, that's an interesting question. I don't, to be perfect. I mean, there are lots of people working within the U.S. administration that care quite deeply about these issues, but the leadership so far has been signaling very clearly that climate change is not a major issue they're interested in tackling, that President Trump hasn't been signaling that this is important to him at all, and in fact, he's very willing to come out against the ideas and the interests of many of his negotiating partners. So his European colleagues at the G7 meetings have been very clear about how they would like this to move forward. They would like the United States to be part of this, and he doesn't seem to be playing ball, basically. So that is, I think that's really significant for progress in this area of the United States. But again, I just want to come back to this. The sub-state action is really fascinating. So the leaders of Canada and Mexico were recently in California, and California has almost in some ways taken a leadership for the United States in negotiating with international actors to try to push back against the Trump administration's attacks on things like fuel emission standards and things like that, the policy actions that help to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And that's really a fascinating place to be watching in the future.
That was this week's Bits. To listen to the full interviews, visit 95bfm.com and check out the BCasts.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/BCasts.